Clap, plap, plap. Every great story ever written begins with this simple yet enlightening phrase. Welcome to the Soxcast, episode 174, where all your hope goes to die, and you're totally okay with that. How you doing, everybody? It's been just a little bit.
It's been a bit, for sure.
It's fine.
Life gets busy sometimes, doesn't it? It's the summer. We're all out here on our billion-dollar yachts that we got from hosting this vast podcasting empire. You know, we need time. You're like, look, we did, like, what, seven of these, and then we took a month off? Like, come on, people. We're not machines here, and we're very important now. We have private islands to visit.
We passed that capture that says we're not a robot.
Exactly.
Nothing better than nothing. The only thing bigger than the podcasting money is that itch.io money.
Oh baby.
That's enough to get the fat cats at itch.
It's rolling in.
Oh guys, I think it's time for the Squarespace ad.
Why doesn't itch.io just throw around the massive weight it holds in this game industry
and just, I don't understand.
And just bully payment processors? We're gonna get in so much trouble. Like this,
no, we'll be fine.
We're in so much trouble. Just this opening 3 minutes is enough. Like Epstein reference, itch.io. Like it's all just, dude. What are they gonna do?
Block socks make people sexy.
Boom!
Oh, no.
Boom.
Guess what, guys? The store was fake.
Oh shit. Rhett is just off the chain. What has a month off done to you, my guy?
I'm not the same anymore. I've watched like 1,000 movies.
Oh my god. To my immediate virtual right, he's got a breed. It's Rhett.
A breed? You know, that opening, I was like, Polly, why would you start with plap, plap, plap? And then I realized, right. That was my one and last visit to AO3.
Yeah. That was the funniest thing. As you said that story.
Let's check out this Hololive fanfic. And it opens with that. And I go, okay, bye.
I know where we're going with this.
Oh, we're already there.
We just started.
I don't think you can enter fandom culture in earnest in your 40s. I think you developed too much of a palate at this point, and
you have too much taste.
I don't think it's possible. Trust me, I've tried.
But of all possible openings,
why clap, not, clap, man? Clap, plap, plap, just, plap.
Just starting right there.
Just start right in the middle of things, man. Just what else do you start with, really? Like, you got to get the creative juices and other juices going somehow. When has a plap, plap, plap ever failed?
Sure.
To my immediate virtual left, he's rotten fruit, he's damaged goods, it's John Thayer.
Mood, correct.
How you doing, yep. John?
That's good. Rotten fruit, damaged goods, that's me.
You doing okay? It doesn't sound like you are. You really identified with that introduction, though.
No, I'm good. All's well. All's fine. Mm-hmm. It's all fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
We're good.
It's all fine. Everything's fine. You know, the world's just going absolutely crazy. Like, everything's going crazy. Did you know Insane Clown Posse had the audacity to not only sample, but interpolate Africa by Toto as the final track on their latest album? And me and Psychic Heist found this out at the same time, and we literally got knocked out. Like, I was eating it lately, because we always do this. It's just like, oh, hey, new ICP album's out. Ha, ha, ha. Let's just go listen to it for a laugh. And then you get to the end, these chill drums start. It's like, oh, what's this? What are we doing? And I'm in the middle of a bite of a delicious yakisoba pan, and
you realize it's Africa by Toto.
You hear the Africa instrumental kick in, and then Shaggy 2 Dope starts rapping over it. That's bad enough. And then Violent J joins and just starts singing the tune, the main vocal melody to Africa. But he's changed all the lyrics to ICP stuff. and God. It just knocked us the fuck out. It was the so the world is going absolutely insane. Nothing is off limits anymore. I don't know what to tell you, folks. We are 8 months into this year, and it feels like it's been 24 months somehow. Just
so wait, is the idea that ICP is above Africa by Toto?
No, or? I just think like I, you know what? Do what you want as an artist. I admire the fucking audacity to just swing for something like that when you are ICP, right? There's a fun audacity in that that I think I appreciate. I don't think it's a good song. I just, you know what? Man, you just
okay. No. You do think ICP is above Africa by Toto? It's okay. You can say it.
Oh, I thought you were throwing shade at the original Africa.
Yeah, I thought that was obviously where we're going.
What we all need to do is we need to go to the official Africa video on YouTube and comment ICP brought me here. No. Let's all do that.
Go to the Africa by Toto
right now and just see how long it takes to see an ICP reference.
I'm already typing it in.
All right, let's go.
Africa video. Let's go. Scroll down.
We're doing a YouTube vandalism live on the air, folks.
1 billion views.
Yeah, it hit. It
really?
Hit. Oh yeah, it's a billion.
Okay, there's a lot. There are 235,000 comments. I'm going to start my newest first.
Somebody mentions that Weezer did a cover.
Weezer did do a cover, but Weezer sucks. I mean, so does ICP, kind of, but, well, all right. ICP.
Okay, I don't actually see any ICP.
I haven't seen a single ICP reference.
There's a lot of new comments, though.
All right, there we go.
That's what happens when you have a 1 billion view video.
Yeah. I've done my due diligence, as I said I would, and we should all follow in kind. So everybody, go to
I actually do see a came from the new ICP song comment.
There we go, baby!
All right. Are you looking at the 12 years ago official HD video?
Yes, with 1.1 billion views.
Yeah, okay. That's I haven't seen yet. All right, maybe it's in moderation.
I've done my part. And that's all I got to say about that.
All right.
Okay, and now we cut.
Oh, I see it. I see Polly's ICP.
So, who wants to talk about stuff? That's what you do on a podcast, right?
Comment.
Y'all can hash it out. I want to go last.
All right. John, do you want to go?
Sure.
Kick us off, John. Let's talk about stuff.
Okay. I feel like, oh, man. I just finished Pokemon Odyssey this morning, so that's like very fresh in my brain. I'm just going to just bang that one out. But I just picked this one up on a total whim where it was like, you know, when something gets dropped in front of you and you're like, this would take like 3 weeks to play and it would be completely not even something that was even remotely on my radar before. No one would ever expect it. It would be really funny if I got emotionally invested in this. For instance, last year I did that with Pokemon Mystery Dungeon.
Oh, right.
And it worked out quite nicely.
That is exactly where I knew that this energy was coming from when I saw you diving into this. Like, okay, this is like a continuation of sorts, even though Mystery Dungeon isn't like a hack.
Mm-hmm. For sure. This wasn't as good as Pokemon Mystery Dungeon.
Nothing is as good as
Pokemon Mystery Dungeon. This is my first Pokemon fan game. I haven't played a lot of fan games outside of my Kaizo binge. I've been mostly like Kaizo Mario. I've mostly been outside, like watching friends get obsessed with, you know, like Mega Man ROM hacks or Doom WADs or other ROM hacks. Or Toho fan games. There's so many Toho fan games, of course.
Oh God, it's a whole industry.
Hololive fan games, like the world is vast. And I've just mostly not touched it. I've played a handful of ROM hacks and fan games over the years, mostly the Kaizo Mario stuff. So this is my first. It is an Etrian Odyssey themed Pokemon ROM hack. And I just blasted through it. It went down real smooth.
Yeah, I thought that this was going to take you like weeks from the way that from the scope of what it sounded like it was, because it was all, I mean, Etrian Odyssey, those games are kind of big.
Well, part of it is that I turned off the battle animations real quick.
Oh, good.
And I did not catch Pokemon. I kind of just got my party at the start. And I was like, yeah, I like these guys.
We'll just roll with it. That's awesome from a gameplay design standpoint, though, because it means you're not really tied to having to play the game a certain way. It's like, hey, if I just want to play with my dudes, I can just play with my dudes.
Someone added me in the chat and said, wait, you finished with Ladian in your final party? Ladian was my lead. Ladian was my fucking killer beast. Because what I did. So I once I got the EV editor, I maxed out. I noticed that Ladian had stronger attack than special attack. And I had a 90 base power physical bug stab move with 100% accuracy accessible to me. And I put all of my EVs into attack for my Ladian, and then some into speed, and I think some bulk. But what it amounted to was that anything that was weak to bug, like the base attack was so high, and with the attack EVs, I could just erase every psychic Pokemon in the game. Everything that was weak to bug, just boom. A lot of Pokemon that weren't weak to bug, boom, just erased. Felt real good.
Got so a Ladian solution. Was my lead.
So they specifically, like, I'm going to just do like a quick summary of like the QOL stuff. Mm-hmm. You can, once you get access to the EV editor, you can just change all of your Pokemon's EVs whenever you want. You can, it's like sliders. It's so easy. EVs are like the stat variants that in Pokemon, mainline Pokemon, are extremely cumbersome to edit. But in this, it's just like said, it's as easy as Pokemon Showdown, which I only have experience with from YouTube videos. But you get reusable TMs, even though it's a Gen 3 hack. God, I've absorbed so much Pokemon bullshit.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
I have a quick question. Do they add new Pokemon to this?
Oh, yeah.
OK, because I saw your screenshot of your team and I said none of these are in the Bible.
they're regional variants of the different Pokemon.
Sure.
So there's a regional variant of Exeggutor and a regional variant.
Yeah, especially the Exeggutor. I'm like, that dude ain't real.
and they're all based on Etrian Odyssey enemies. So like, I recognize the Scyther as looking like the mantis that kills you on the third floor of Etrian Odyssey. So
but this still plays more like Pokemon, right?
Yes, regrettably. basically, like, for a little while it was really hard, and then I did some more quests on the overworld and I got the EV editor, and then I kind of figured it out. I figured out that the game just shows you, the move is highlighted in green on the right side when it's going to be super effective, or red if it's going to be not effective.
I really like that.
I think the type chart is really cumbersome.
Yeah, I think it's a fun system, like when you have to uncover the data, like you kind of have to throw your stuff at it. But I'm okay if that's just something they surface from the get go. Like the Labyrinth of Toho games kind of all do that now, where it's just like you always know if something's going to be super effective or just like terrible.
Exactly. Like it's built around, they're giving you maximum information transparency. They're letting you respec easily. If you get like, you can catch a Pokemon and then bring it up to the same level as your other guys with like, they give you an item for that. It's like, and it's infinite. So it's the whole thing is built around like maximum QOL, maximum respecking easily. Mm-hmm. So it's not, doesn't really feel like an RPG as much, but it makes like building out tech for the boss fights, like really, it means they can make the boss fights harder. It means that they can get way, way more complicated with the bosses than fucking Brock having two rock type moves. I have two rock type Pokemon. Instead, it's like you get to like the third floor stratum boss, and it's like, I have six Pokemon and one of them is Entei, and they're all different types. Every boss is the champion fight.
Yeah, the regular Pokemon games just being like, here's the boss with the same type, so once you have a weakness to that.
It's like, oh, it's here's the seventh boss. He's the fire boss. Bring in Blastoise.
Yeah, sweep it.
It's not hard. No, this is much more crunchy and technical, and they give you so many tools to build out your party that it doesn't feel cumbersome to play it that way. So I had a really good time. It's not a dungeon crawler. Money just collapses like a third in. So you have infinite healing essentially. And beyond, but it felt, I had to kind of figure it out, which was satisfying. But there's no resource stress. You're basically just fighting, you know, 500 trainer battles. And then watching very cute cutscenes, very endearing cutscenes. This is my first story I've written cutscenes.
Oh, get the good stuff. Let's go.
The story is very backgrounded for the first third, so you don't really understand, like, oh, no, this is going to be a webcomic.
That's some energy.
So I was endeared. And then the ending is like a big. It ends on a major bummer.
Oh, beautiful.
Fantastic.
I'm just like, holy shit.
I'm a big fan of games that end on major bummers. I played one that had old major bummer.
It did not hit like the number one thing for me now is Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Oh,
because
right.
That one I finished it and I just kind of laid back and stared at the ceiling.
Yeah.
And it's like, it wasn't like the kind of like full catharsis you get from like a trad from like, you know, like Utawa Ruminoret. Mm-hmm. When that one ends, it's like, oh, but you kind of feel so full in your heart. Mm-hmm. Instead, Coder 2 is just, you kind of finish it like, oh.
I kind of remember it felt like that one ruined your weekend.
Yeah,
like it just
I
finished it on my birthday.
Oh, God, right. Yeah.
Christ. No, this is not that because it wasn't well written enough to. It wasn't well written enough to be coded.
It's no mystery dungeon.
Mm. It's, oh my God, it's not a mystery dungeon. I just like posted a song from Pokemon Mystery Dungeon and then wrote like a quote for that one of the characters says and welled up and nobody in the chat reacted or cared. And I'm like, yeah, I get it.
I mean, no one's played.
Yeah, like if they've not played it, they obviously don't have the context. Like, mm-hmm. We were all doing that like the other day where we were posting all these songs from these games that made us cry. But it's just like, if you don't have the context, mm-hmm. It's not really going to hit. So nobody's going to know what I swear means or am I, you know, they're not going to get why those hurt
or caught you.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Trails fans. Yeah. Post two words.
Yep.
Oh. Yep. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's so good.
Yeah, it's a good one. Hey, it's imagine having two words make a 50-hour game.
That's insane when you think about it.
That's like, pretty potent.
When you consider how good that game is already, because Trails from Zero is pretty goddamn solid.
Yeah, then, I really like that one.
But you can also say just like, oh, and two words are like the height. Of that game's greatness. It's like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Good game.
Oh,
so yeah. That was my first Pokemon ROM hack. There's other ones. This was still 25 hours, and it involved fighting 500 trainer battles in a row. And the story wasn't very good. So I'm not like over the moon. Boy, I need to play a bunch of these. But you know what? Better than fucking Pokemon X and Y. Better than Omega Ruby, Apple Sapphire. Better than my last experiences with the mainline games. So that was that aspect of it is very satisfying. I might look at like Crystal Clear or something down the line.
You know what I love about these last few John arcs is that John like hates Nintendo, but like Kirby, Pokemon,
Kirby,
Super Mario RPG, dude, it's time to admit you are tsundere. For Nintendo, it's time.
I think there's layers here where I genuinely believe Nintendo and Game Freak kind of can't make a good Pokemon game anymore.
I agree. I'm mostly
but fans
just playing.
Sure as hell can.
Yeah, for sure.
But But Kirby is in good hands right now.
Yeah.
Kirby's that look. I hate Nintendo. I hate the corporation.
I mean,
Nintendo.
Yes, the corporate shit is dire
absolutely
right now.
Dire. Yeah.
Look.
Kumazaki.
Yeah, you got your Kondos, you got your Kumazakis. Sometimes a specific property is just in good hands. And even corporate overlords can't shake that.
Yeah. I was mostly kidding. I was just playing.
Yeah, I know. I'm
okay.
Also, Mario RPG is a Square game. Let's not get real.
Square did all the heavy lifting on that very delightful video game.
Mario RPG is like perfect. I finished that a little bit ago. It's like perfect. It's wonderful. It's a joy the whole time. It is
one of the few games I would consider perfect. I think that game is just perfect.
It's absolutely stunning, and it's probably like lower tier among like the real banger mid-90s games.
Yeah,
and it's the one they just like farted out. All right, we did Chrono Trigger. We did all these other games. We did Final Fantasy VI. We did Live Alive. We're just going to fart out a Mario spinoff for Nintendo. Yeah. And then they put it out. And it's like, well, it's the game they farted out. And it's so good that other teams are going to spend like 25 years trying to recapture this.
Yeah.
And failing for the most part.
And much like Super Metroid, it is a game that my parents got for me when I was very sick. So it's like, that's another one of those games that's tied to a memory of me being very ill and my parents buying me cool video games. My parents never missed, man. My parents always got me the best games.
Fuck yeah, that feels good.
Yeah, that was kind of my experience as a kid, though, when I was like, well, this isn't as good as Final Fantasy 2, 3, Chrono Trigger. Like, Square was kind of on fire, and the Mario game is fine, and then Final Fantasy 7 comes out, and I'm like, yep.
Oh, yeah.
That's the stuff.
The way you're saying they've been chasing that high for 25 years is also true, and I'm just like, man, it's also like the same as the Yoshi games.
Oh, God, yeah.
That one was even more dire, I think.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Because I played Superstar Saga as a kid. I fucking loved it. I think back now, I watched play Mario RPG, and it's like, oh, a lot of that was just Mario RPG.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lot of the charm that the Mario and Luigi games have, like, started with Super Mario RPG. And I think that the Mario and Luigi games absolutely did a good job of bouncing from that and establishing their own identity as well. It's a whole, like... It's where I feel like Super Mario RPG is where they started to embrace trying to write comedy into their games. Because Super Mario RPG is genuinely very funny, especially with constantly. A lot of the miming, the way, you know, like characters just transform into other characters at will and do stupid things. It's very, you know, and when you look at the Mario, the Mario and Luigi games, they're very much cut from that. Like, they're always trying to make you laugh and have a good time. And I just always loved them for that. That they always kept that. Like, even Paper Mario has a very similar tone of just, you know, hey,
for sure,
a lot of real snappy dialogue here.
I'm really excited to play Paper Mario.
So goddamn charming. Still,
it looks magical. I'm so jazzed. I will say, Booster in Mario RPG is just like, that's just like patient zero of all indie RPGs.
Oh my god.
Booster's just an Undertale character.
You can trace it all back. Absolutely. Like, Booster is one of the best segments in a video game ever, and everybody that is an indie developer has in some way pulled from that gremlin-ass energy.
Try to do a Papyrus or whatnot. That's just Booster. It's Boosters all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You make a weird little freak.
Yeah,
and like, then he just follows you through the dungeon.
In these Mario and Luigi games, you've got Fawful, who is very similarly so unhinged.
Mm-hmm. That is one thing Superstar Saga does, is that Cacoletta is a major presence in the whole game, whereas Smithy is deliberately in the background the whole game in Mario RPG. So that is one thing they do very differently.
Yeah,
I'll say Mario RPG Superstar Saga Final Dungeon is Bowser's Castle, where you fight the Koopalings, and then Mario RPG's Final Dungeon is a step past that with a bunch of horrible freaks you've never seen before.
It's so good. good. It's so good.
Like, it's just that level beyond of imagination that feels so good.
It feels like you escaped the, like, I can't explain it. It's just, there's a feeling when you hit the final dungeon and you get dropped in and it's just this dark ass. And then you go into the little factory section. It's like, we are no longer in Mushroom Kingdom anymore. This is so out of the ordinary. This is not where Mario goes. And it's such a cool thing for that game to have ended on. It's such a good exclamation mark.
A world of no dreams, only weapons.
Yes!
It's really funny because I'm like, I haven't seen, oh, we still haven't met Smithy. And then I see him and I'm like, oh, I'm okay. Yeah, that's cool. And then they get to the final form. It's like, surprise, I was a horrible little freak all along too. Yes, thank you. That's it. Just what I wanted. I wanted one more horrible freak. Yes.
I love the RPGs. Game. I love the RPGs in that they also just make Bowser into this lovable doof.
He's such a doof.
He's so good. I love him so much.
Oh, God. Geno's great. Oh, I get why people love Geno.
I remember you shitting on Geno for years. Like, that can't be that great. I swear to God, I could remember
I don't remember I don't remember that, but I completely believe it.
Yeah, I could swear, like, people only like that game for Geno, and he doesn't even matter. It's like, or something. I remember, was it you? It might not have been you.
I haven't played this game before, so.
Okay, maybe it wasn't you. I just remember somebody going off in our community about, the only reason people say they like Geno is just because he's only been in Super Mario RPG. Nobody actually likes him as a character because he sucks and doesn't do anything
anyway.
The
finale.
Yeah,
he like ties the whole story together. It's perfect.
I tied that to you for some reason. Maybe that says more about me. Maybe that says more about
me. Maybe it says more about me.
Jeez. Maybe that says more about the kind of friend I am.
Yeah, right.
I kind of vaguely think it was John as well. And you guys have to remember, though, there were like literally decades of people whining about him not being in Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
if I was reacting to something, it was that.
Maybe it was just that being fed up with people yelling about Geno being in Smash. Maybe that's so funny. Maybe that's just where it came out somewhere. Who knows?
Who knows? It's a mystery. That fucking Shimomura music, huh?
Holy shit. Just no
playing
music.
This and then Live Alive last year. It's like, oh my God. Yeah.
Fuck me. Jams Central.
Yeah. I mean, I'm calling, like, I say a lower tier. Like, it's still perfect.
We literally, like, 5 minutes ago called this a perfect video game.
Uh huh.
And it's low tier. Just in comparison to everything that it's up against from that era of RPGs, which is just magnanimous.
Mm-hmm. I think my deal is that I prefer something like Mario RPG, which is like pretty humble in scope. It doesn't really go big with the story until near the very end. I prefer that to something like, you know, Final Fantasy VIII or whatnot. The Square games on PSX that are like 40 to 50 hours long and really ambitious and kind of whiff on a lot of fronts.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would rather have the punchy 20 hour game that just nails it. And like Super Mario RPG is one of the last ones of those that Square made.
Toss it on the Phantasy Star 4 pile.
It's on the Phantasy Star 4 pile. So I had a blast with that. One more thing.
Yeah.
We gotta let it go on the podcast.
It's been a bit.
I read the entire Kaguya-sama manga.
Oh my God.
Most of it since the last podcast. I read like 12 volumes in like 3 days.
Well, to be fair, it's been a month, so I could read, like, I read most of Hoseki no Kuni in like a week, so
But like so this is one of those things where like both of you had heard offhand that it wasn't that after Kaguya-sama splits from the manga it wasn't great.
Yeah.
So of course now I'm reading the manga. I'm don't poison my brain with that shit, because that means I was reading the back half of the manga like, what does fucking Mal think? Not like, why doesn't Mal fucking like this? Fuck those idiots. It's in my head constantly. It's like, well, maybe Mal doesn't like this. Maybe Mal doesn't like this.
Is this where the shoe's going to drop? Is this where the shoe's going to drop? Maybe
is this where the
chapter.
Shoe's going to drop? Oh, my God. I think that the back half of the manga is very in line dramatically with where the all the promises that the story made in the first half. I think that people got a little cooled on it because those story promises take the forefront over, you know, the gags.
Right.
And it gets pretty fucking sappy by the end. I still cried like four times. And I have a heart of stone.
Of course. Of course.
If Rhett experienced this whole story, he'd be a fucking...
We'd be calling 911.
They should animate it.
They should.
if they do a good job with the best material here, I think they'll fucking wreck you. Like, it's sappy, but it wasn't so sappy across the line for me where I stopped crying my eyes out because right. I really fucking love these characters.
And these characters really love one another. So it makes it like there's a, like, I think that's the thing about Kaguya-sama I like a lot is that it is a gag show, but the emotional like realities of these characters, you still feel those, like they're there. There's a very deep, warm, sincere affection that's there the whole time, even when these characters are laughing because somebody said wiener 20 times.
So fucking funny. Oh my god. I think the shit. Oh yeah, I was like, wait, what's the name of our favorite character? Hayasaka, of course. She gets perfect ending. She gets everything she needs. Not in the sense of like she gets everything she could have wanted, sure, conceivably, but she has the perfect resolution that wasn't what I didn't realize was going to be her perfect resolution. I love how they handle Hayasaka in the back half. Ishigami and what's her name?
What's her name?
The short angry girl.
Miko.
Yeah. Miko. Yeah, we all love Miko.
Oh, her. Love her so much.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Ishigami's like wannabe girlfriend.
She wannabe girlfriend comes back, but Miko is a larger presence. Okay, they do literally anything with the, they do good stuff with the wannabe girlfriend. She is not just in the show, she's like just kind of blank slate, pretty popular girl. I think she becomes a person.
They make a hint at things happening with her, like in the last bit, but they don't really go over it, which I know that they do in the manga. So
I think it's pretty nicely done. I think they go one step too far with trying to make everything nice for Ishigami.
Right.
And like it kind of felt like, okay, come on.
maybe a little too sappy.
Too sappy. It felt like, you know, when like there's like an outstanding ugliness or bad thing or like somebody wronged a character, and you can just like, when me, the reader, I just kind of accept like, okay, that's a thing that happened in the past. We're moving on. Mm-hmm. But then the author, it seems like, no. We have to address this. We have to make this okay. And I'm like, well, really. No, you don't.
You don't have to.
You can just be over. And especially with how like kind of incel-y some of the plotting around Ishigami can be.
Yeah, he can definitely be a little much even in the show. It's just like, okay.
It's not even his character. It's treats the way he's been, how the story discusses the ways he's been wronged.
Right.
I like him as a person. I like his character.
Yeah.
I feel like the reality of the story is like straining too much to elevate him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get you.
So I think that was my issue. So Ishigami gets a big forefront, and I think that also might be like pushes some other folks away. It's like they spend, you know, 6 or 7 volumes, the main two kind of go into the background, and we're resolving a lot of these other, like moving all these other character stories forward. Mm-hmm. And they were characters that didn't have their full arcs in the animated material.
Yeah, like so some characters are literally just gag characters for a really long time.
Oh my god, the girl who's like in the background crying about
the
couple.
Yes,
she's in the background for like 9 volumes, and then gets a name, and then slowly becomes one of the most important characters. It's great.
that's kind of funny.
It's wonderful.
It's really good.
There's a good 4 volumes of. I mean, I feel like the show makes the promise. The early manga makes the promise of, like, what would you main boy, what would you do if, I'm bad with names of fiction characters, I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. What would you do if Kaguya went to the moon and left you the elixir? Like, they make that promise explicitly, and you don't get the resolution of that in the animated material.
No.
You need I feel like the story did really, for me, need that aspect of
bringing it full circle
to the Kaguya story.
To the actual Kaguya story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a good four or five volumes of Kaguya. It's ultimately pretty sappy, maybe a little bit easy, but not too easy. It's okay. I was still really pleased with it, and I cried a lot.
Always a sign of good media.
And then there's like two more volumes of epilogue after that.
Oh jeez.
It is extremely the Matsuri Bayashi of Kaguya-sama. That is the energy of the back half over the back. Like the last quarter is extremely the Matsuri Bayashi of Kaguya-sama. So like it is not a disaster. It is, I think I think the anime leaves you wanting more, and then the manga leaves you with, I'm full. I've had exactly the right amount of Kaguya. It's the same thing with Konosuba, where it's not that the material gets really worse. It's just it keeps going and going and going, and it's like, okay, yeah, I'm good.
I'm fine.
I've had enough.
Maybe 17.
You popped out.
Volumes is enough. I popped out.
Yeah.
Am I back now?
You're back.
Yeah. All right, clap.
You're good.
We don't do editing here anymore.
Nah.
We don't?
Fuck that shit.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
We do. I'm just going to leave this in now.
Maybe 17 light novels of Konosuba is the correct amount of Konosuba. Sure. Maybe that is enough. Maybe 28 volumes of Kaguya-sama is enough. Mm-hmm. I think I need one brain dead rom-com that is way too long in my veins. That's anime or manga or something.
Yeah.
Every 2 years. Cause I read My Sonny Koku a couple years ago, and I read Konosuba a few years before that. And I've read this just one real good, long, stupid rom-com.
Why are you calling them stupid and brain dead? When you said that, I thought, oh, you're going to say isekai.
I'm not denigrating them. I'm saying that they are light and fluffy. I need one light and fluffy rom-com that is way too long.
Yeah.
Every couple years. That's what I meant.
I thought if you were asking for brain dead shows, I was like, oh, I got some isekai to show you.
No, I need it to be sweet, and I need it to be a complete full arc where everybody smooches at the end.
Okay, so in 2 years you'll read Fruits Basket.
Oh yes. And oh, that's exactly right, Rat. That's what's gonna be the next one, isn't it? That one's actually shoujo, right?
Yeah.
Good.
And I'll just be like, you could have watched the anime.
Yeah, it's the thing is, reading manga's faster.
True.
Because it's like, oh, this would have taken, like, this would have taken several hours, and I just chewed through 12 all. I just chewed through like 3 cores worth of anime in a day and a half.
God.
All right, that's my piece. Thanks for listening.
All right.
Well then,
Holly, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Well, I happened to play the new Eye of the Somnium Files installment.
Oh boy, haven't heard much about this one.
I played No Sleep for Kaname Date. This was announced like 2 months ago, just kind of out of nowhere. Just hey, there's a new Eye game coming out, and it's kind of an experimental release, I think, because it's
interesting.
It's a cheaper, smaller scope kind of like side story that takes place between the first game and Nirvana Initiative, because I mean, hey, like Date is an investigator, so you know, you could have little one-off cases where it's just like, okay, in the 2 years between those two games, here's what he was doing.
You know, imagine if this franchise just keeps going on for like 5 more games. See, like, and they keep doing and they keep doing it takes place between 1 and 2.
I think that would be, you know what, like, this is a series I think they could get away with being that stupid. Like, I think, like, if you look at the general tone,
and also having written itself into weird corners multiple times already. Good.
God. And then just hand waving them away, like, oh yeah, yeah, it's just this. The stupid simple explanation that's just like, okay, you didn't want to write, you didn't really want to write about that, did you? So this game is again, it's a side game, so it's a cute little, like, I think it was like 15-ish hours or
it's
something.
Not cute.
It's really tight. But the game begins with Iris, who is the series, like, mascot idol character. She gets abducted seemingly by aliens. That's what happens in the opening cutscenes. Flying saucers come in and just kidnap her. Because
she was right all along.
She was right all along. I love the way this game kind of leans into, oh, wait, Iris's dumb conspiracy theories. Okay, sure, they're real. Why not? And she gets abducted and she's forced to play a death game where she has to solve escape rooms. And her only communication with the outside is Kaname Date, our good smart boy who you want to have on your team.
So we need you to solve the Sudoku. Dead.
Oh God, done. Here's a what do you, what's your porno mag trivia? Boom, I got you. So the main chunk of the game is still just, you know, the typical visual novel type investigative stuff with Aiba and Date trying to figure out, like, where's Iris being held? This makes absolutely no sense. There's no way she could be in space. This is silly. And, like, why is she playing escape rooms? And so the game kind of, like, alternates between, like, these lengthy visual novel segments where you're just investigating and talking to people and figure out conversations. And then syncing is back, obviously, where there are somniums. You dive into witnesses' dreams and, you know, find clues to solving everything that's going on. Okay. And then there are escape rooms, which are these big, like they're essentially the Zero Escape. They function very much like Zero Escape's escape rooms. Like, they're big, elaborate environmental and, like, sometimes compartmentalized puzzles that you have to solve to move the story along, but you run around in a 3D space, so they make use of you having to be a lot more observant instead of just, like, having to, like, point and click on 2D background elements and stuff to find puzzles and clues. You've got to use the environment, like, look at things from different angles, or and they make a lot of really clever use of the environment, and I think they're kind of, like, the best part. I think all of the escape,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think all the escape rooms were, like, really clever, and, like, I felt like a big brain for figuring them out. I don't know that they're, like, harder than some of the harder Zero escape rooms, but I think that, like, these being, like, big and elaborate and you just, like, running around in them and them having, like, a sense of place and the puzzles making these big parts of the environment change and the like, I think all of that's just really freaking cool. And the somniums are back too, but they've really pared them down. They're very simplified this time. They're like, the Somnium Dream Worlds are where Nirvana Initiative and the original game just get to go crazy with just, like, dream logic and just things that make no sense, but you've got to kind of try to find a way everything fits together. And a lot of that's just kind of, like, pulled back here. And there's like four somniums and four escape rooms, and it's just like, oh, the escape rooms are absolutely the best part of this gameplay equation.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I guess overall,
I'm glad that stuff landed at least.
Yeah, like that's the stuff that I was worried about, because I was just like, well, like, we're bringing back something that was not a part of this, and we're doing it in a way that, like, is a little non-traditional, and mm-hmm. so, you know, having the 3D space and like how good are they going to signpost this stuff, but they also give you like a little pulse button that you can use like a certain number of times per escape room that'll like show you where all the interactables are or show
I
you.
See that's cute.
Yeah, it shows you little points of interest. It's something that I think mm-hmm. like a lot of modern point and click games do now, is like if you hit tab, yeah. they'll like highlight everything that's interactable. Mm-hmm. So the game kind of like has a little function like that that'll show you all the interactables in a room if you're kind of stuck. And the hinting system is seemingly pretty good at knowing when you're stuck and good at like kind of like, oh, hey, giving you like a little nudge in the right direction if you kind of like try and aren't quite grasping what a puzzle's doing. So
appreciate that.
Yeah, well, that stuff
can be really dangerous when they just tell you the answer when you're still thinking and you're like, oh, it's fuck so off.
I don't think that at any point the game ever just said, yeah. oh, it's this. Like, I'm pretty good. Sure that if you play the, because there is a difficulty for the escape rooms and the Somniums. You can play those on hard and get as few hints as possible. And like with the Somniums, like the time restraints can be way harder. But failing that stuff is just so just like, oh, you just kind of repeat the thing you did, but make the optimal choices so you don't lose as much time. Like it's never really that big of a deal, because the conceit is always you get 6 minutes in Somnium and then you have to figure out everything in 6 minutes. But there's a lot of time dilation going on and ways that you can play with like how the time works and everything. So but again, very little consequence for failure. It's just, again, keeping the conceit alive and making that world still feel tangible, I guess. But yeah, the escape rooms, had a real good time with those. Like, those were just a real fun, like the last one in particular just was just like, oh, like I love what they're doing here. Like, I won't spoil what they do because it's a real cool way to have approached it, but just a lot of cool stuff going on there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and, cool. and
so what about, so you, it seems like you're a little cool on the parts outside the escape rooms, though.
It's a side story. Okay. It does touch on some things from the first game that didn't have like complete resolution, and that was nice. I liked that because it was something that I was genuinely curious about from the first game, and I just didn't think they were ever going to touch that again. Mm-hmm. But they touched that. And I had fun with the game. But I don't know that I would call this like an essential story that you should be in a rush to play. It's just like, hey, do you like all of these characters doing the things that they do and engaging with each other in the ways that they do, because those interactions are just so well written and fun. They've maintained all of that. It's just maybe the stakes are a lot lighter here. It's smaller scale, but it's still more of that thing that you like. So if you want that, go for it. But at this point, it doesn't feel essential to anything. So I wouldn't be in a rush to just go out unless you just really need that in your life right now. But if you want to like wait for a sale or something, or play it on your friend's account, so you don't.
I was gonna say, if you happen to have a friend who has it on their Steam and you can play it through their account, maybe that's an okay way to play it. Yeah, like, it kind of feels like not necessarily fan fiction, but like a fan disc thing where it's just an optional side story not going to progress the plot in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
Like, especially being a midquel.
Yeah. And there's like a cute new character that gets added. That's a new Somnium technician. She's really cool. I liked her a lot.
Then they have a really convoluted reason for why she's not in two.
They really do.
Oh, no.
So, I the Somnium. This is such a weird series because
it's so weird.
Because Nirvana Initiative did this thing where they had to make absolutely sure they mentioned nothing that happened in that first game. Reference nothing. Pretend it doesn't exist, but all the relationships that have changed from that first game are still changed in the ways that they were in the first game. And the first game has a very big thing happen at the end that Nirvana Initiative just like steps aside from and just writes it off with this one note line that a character is just like, yeah, this is why. It's like, are you kidding me?
Well, there's a choice in like the opening scene where they go, hey, did you play the first game?
Yeah, they're like, and then enter the culprit's name from the first game. And if you do that,
oh, right.
And if you do that, they'll make little itty bitty tiny teeny little references to it. But yeah. It still doesn't change the very big thing that changed at the end of that game.
It was just so funny having the game be like, hey, did you play the first one? Like, I've never seen anything quite like the way they handled it.
This one does it too, and I don't know why.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does. I don't know why. It does. It asks the same question, and I don't know why.
Oh, weird. It's like a running joke now.
It's just so weird that that second game was just like screaming and running away from that first game as much as it could, and I don't understand why.
That's very strange. I probably don't have the context for why
you definitely don't.
You don't. And the thing is, it's just like, I think the Somnium Files is just a good standalone video game on its own. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to play Nirvana Initiative if you don't want. I don't think you need to play No Sleep for Kaname Date if you don't want.
Yeah.
Like, but that first game as a standalone piece of work, I think is absolutely amazing. And then the ways that they run away from it in the second and third games are just like, it's just so weird, and I don't understand why they're like this with it.
Mm-hmm. It feels like, what if they made sequels to Ghost Trick? Like, just in the way that first game really was so self-contained.
It really does feel like, here's what would happen if you made another Ghost Trick.
And you have to, like, deal with the main character not being the main character.
Yeah!
Yeah, and all the weirdness that would come with.
Yep. No, that's really funny.
Yeah, it's so weird. But I had a good time with this. I didn't hate it at all.
It sounds good, not mind blowing.
Yeah, it's not mind. Like I spent a weekend with it, and it gave me all the ha ha he he's that I like with these characters. They do go a little bit overboard. There is a joke that is very specific to the main character that comes up in the first game, gets a few uses. It's very cute. It's very funny. Mm. And then they overuse it in Nirvana Initiative.
Oh, no.
1/4 through this game, they had already fucking ran it into the ground for me. It's like, it's literally like they can't go 20 sentences without somebody making the same joke about Date. And it's like, oh, my God. It's not that funny if you keep doing it. It was funny because it was weird and non sequitur in the first game. It was just the weirdest thing to happen out of nowhere. And then they just kind of made it a permanent part of Date's character that just they never stop with now. It's just so annoying.
That can be really insufferable.
It is. It does become insufferable. Like by 1/4 through this game, I was like, please stop. By the halfway mark, I was just like, you're driving me crazy. By the third, by like the last 1/4 of the game, I was just literally skipping the dialogue because I didn't want to hear the jokes anymore.
So fucking funny.
I think I know. Is too.
You know what it is. You've played the first game. You know the one thing they could take
is
from
it
that
porno
game.
Mag?
Yes.
It's porno. Oh, it's not. Oh,
it's porno mag.
Okay. Okay. Do you want to know what I thought it was?
What did you think it was?
His inability to remember this one character's name.
They still do that. They still do.
Yeah, they still bring out the classic.
That's a good gag. That is a really
good
gag.
Okay, but I can see it being run into the ground easily.
Sure, but they only do it like once or twice per game, and it's just like, oh, hey.
Okay.
This one, like, they really go with it, too. It's like a 7 or 8 minute gag.
They still kind of do run it into the ground.
But in a good way. It's very charming the way it keeps going, because by this point, that character's just like, you know, come on, you know the thing we do. And Date's just like, no, I really don't know what you're talking about. So, yeah, like that's a fun little thing. It's interesting. I'll be interested in seeing if this, like, what this means for what they're trying to do in terms of, like, scope for their games. Because this feels like an experiment to see, like, can we make smaller games with less content that take only a year and a half to come out? Can we do that? Is that a thing?
Like, people 100 line. Is cheering for this game.
Like 100 line mile, right?
Yeah, there you go. He's just...
just a nice little punchy one and done.
Well, we take like 10 hours of assets and then we stress
that shit then. So yeah, good God, video game. I'll be interested in seeing like what they do from here. It sounds like this is not reviewing very well though.
That's a bummer.
So I'm not sure.
I would in their position, I would care more how it's selling.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know that that's doing so great either. If Steam DB numbers really, are to be believed. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of forgot about it after you stopped talking about it, like after one weekend. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, that's fair. It's like I said, a little one-off story that's just kind of, hey, it's there if you want it.
So maybe you need the full-blown sequel to have more eyes on it for longer.
Eyes, huh?
The name of the series is Death because AI has changed dramatically in 6 years since.
Yeah, this game's got a lot of AI stuff in it, too. It's very much going in a... I won't spoil it. I'll just say there are some things they're saying about AI in this game that I think maybe Uchikoshi wasn't writing those parts.
Oh no. I feel... Uchikoshi tackling AI would have a very different tone, probably.
Yeah. I don't think that's the direction they went here. I don't know. I know that he was a supervisor on this one. Mm. He didn't write it specifically, I don't believe.
Yeah, he was busy writing 50 hours of 100 line.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, that was my No Sleep for Konami Date experience. I did finish an anime. I believe me and Rhett both did.
Ooh.
We finished the Umamusume Cinderella Grey Season 1.
Yeah.
Man. Umamusume anime has kind of been on a real big tear lately with the movie and Road to the Top. We're not going to mention season 3.
I will say, like, I mentioned, like, oh, there's the good ones and the bad ones. And I'm like, there are way more good ones, actually.
There are. Absolutely. Yeah. Season 2, Road to the Top, the movie, and Cinderella Grey. And Cinderella Grey is an adaptation of a manga that's been going on for a while. Very beloved. Like, the art for that manga is absolutely insane too. Like I don't know who the artist is for that manga, but it looks ridiculously good, and the anime kind of takes a lot of its stuff from that. So this one centers on Oguri Cap, who has been a kind of a background character in a lot of the show. She's always just kind of seen eating. That's her thing.
Eat.
And it's still her thing here. She still eats. She likes to eat. But she's got a very cute story where she grew up with kind of like a leg defect. Her mom like massaged her legs and knees while she was growing up. And like she couldn't walk as a child and everything. And then she grows up and it's just like, I need to run. It's like, and the reason I need to run is because I can do this. Like, it's just like, there's this quiet thankfulness she has to just being able to exist in the way that she can, you know, to run, to do the thing that she was born to do that wasn't able to do because she was born with a leg defect. And it's just like, and the tone for this series kind of starts way different.
Sounds really, really sweet, Polly.
It really is.
Sounds really nice.
It really is. And then it also starts with a bullying arc.
Yeah. Something they would never have in the main series because they're all like IP licensed horses.
Yeah. But they kind of like, they got somebody to agree to something because Oguri Cap is a real horse. This one starts as like kind of like, you know, these girls just bullying her because she kind of, you know, came from a backwoods, you know, nowhere. And which is funny because they're literally in the middle of nowhere. They are the hick.
Yeah.
They're the hick backwoods country bumpkins. And they're making fun of the bumpkin for being a bumpkin. But yeah, it starts with a cute little bullying arc, but you know, as one should, you know, she worms her way into everybody's hearts because she just doesn't give a shit.
Good.
It's
and
so
she's
good.
Really fast.
She's really, really fast. Yeah, she shuts up her critics in a lot of ways that are very funny, both through her running and through her just being very oblivious to the fact that people are being mean to her.
I know. I expected her to be like the really cool stoic type. And then it's like, oh, you're like a goofball.
Yeah, she's very charming in a lot of ways that I was not expecting. And as has kind of been the standard for this series now, they're just really good at writing very potent drama for these characters, and especially like when you get to the races. Even like, it's so wild that the races are literally always the same thing. Like, they're just running around a fucking track, dude. What can you do with that? How do you keep making that interesting? And then they keep doing it. But it goes real big and stupid at the end in ways that are very, very satisfying.
Good. I think the last race of this season is probably my favorite race in the entire franchise thus far.
It's
like, holy fuck.
They go so all out on just the tension, the dramatic animation. There's like, this looks like Trigger shit, but I know that Trigger was not on this. They did the movie, which also has a lot of insane race moments.
But this one is full on like Chuny horse with the flame in the eye.
Oh my god! Like just lightning flying everywhere.
Oh yeah, the lightning symbolism.
Oh my god, it's so big and stupid and loud, but also emotionally engaging. You are there, man. You feel it. You were on the edge of your seat, and it's just like, and the storytelling, like their storytelling chops have gotten so good. Like they pull some things in the last few episodes where that just kind of left me like, how did you do that? How did you get me? How did you do that? So yeah, man, that was like just the first season. There is another season that's starting in October. I don't know that even season two is going to wrap it up, because I know that the manga literally just got announced to be going into its final arc, starting like this month.
Sounds like it won't then, because the manga has been going since 2020.
Yeah. So yeah, this is like, I think the longest running like sub property of Umamusume.
Almost certainly. When was the first season of the anime?
2017.
Oh, so this one didn't predate that. Okay.
So like 3 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Hasn't been going that long.
Nah. God, it hurts every time.
This is created by Cygames. This is the fucking Granblue people.
Granblue! Yeah. This so is funny. The Granblue people! They got their own animation studio, and they're like some of the best doing it now. Like, I need to watch Apocalypse Hotel just because it looks insane.
That was them.
Yeah, that was them.
They did Princess Connect season 2, and it looks insane. Yep.
Like, this is an animation studio that's got its chops. Like, so like when they're so when they're animating these like big horse races, and they go into these like, you know, make the last corner last for 5 minutes.
I was gonna say, like, it's very shonen timing, where like the last two episodes of this, like the last straightaway is like
3 hours long.
So good.
It's so good.
No choice.
They just relish in it. They live in it. And again, you have to admire like the love for horse racing that team has, because that's the reason this shit is getting the respect it's getting, like in the way that they're animating it, because they're just horse racing nerds. They're just little goblins that love that shit, and like that's why it's so good, is because there's
fucking
that much,
awesome,
yeah, like when there's that much passion behind it. I think that there's something that just kind of shines through, even if maybe it's not like, even if it's not something you like, I think that it's easy to kind of just be like, I can admire that from the outside just because that's crazy,
that kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah, like that enthusiasm and like living your enthusiasm, because people don't get to do that anymore because it's cringe, right?
I would say this series definitely feels like people embracing the cringe and not giving a fuck anymore.
God, this series in particular has absolutely embraced its cringe in a way that just like, you know, like
I think from the fan perspective as well, is like, I don't care how goofy this looks, I'm having fun.
Yep. Like when you have like people in the U.S. sending Japanese retired horse racers, Japanese retired racing horses, tons of grass so that the goddamn farm will not have to buy grass for 2 years. You know what? Maybe the internet's good sometimes.
Yeah. I know. The respect for the real horses is also really sweet.
Yeah, like I think that like it's an ugly industry, it always will be, but I think that there's something there where
yeah,
there's a genuine wholesomeness to the way that people try to, you know, show affection to these actual horses.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly, I'm not compelled by the way that nerds will point out all the ways that, like, certain interests are unethical or the industries are ugly, and then kind of glaze over the ways that their special nerd interests are, like, ugly or exploitative.
Sure, sure.
Like, people, so that's the vibe I get when people try to gotcha about, like, you realize horse racing is evil, right? And it's like, it's sports. Of course it is.
Yeah, like, that's, like, all sports.
Lots of people still like sports.
Yeah.
You can't just throw all sports, people that like sports, in the trash.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, it just is what it is, man. And mm-hmm. I think that, like, Umamusume as a whole feels like this, I don't want to say a humanization of play, but it feels like there's something happening here with the respect to the actual horses and their legacies. I think that feels really good. Like, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't adequately explain it because I really don't know the words. It's just, but there's just something there that I think
something warm.
Yeah, it's warm and sincere, even if there's ugliness to, you know, that whole thing. I think that there's still, like, a spot of brightness in that people have come at this thing from such a positive angle. You know, just like, what can we do to make these retired horses' lives better? You know, they did the same thing with Nice Nature before he died. You know, like, it's just a very interesting thing. It's a weird phenomenon. Cinderella Gray is awesome. Just watch it. You don't even have to have watched any of the other... Like, that's a good thing about Umamusume, is you can kind of just jump in wherever.
All of it.
Yeah.
Except until the second season of this one, all of it is self-contained so far.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I would say, like, if you want a good taste, Road to the Top is free on YouTube.
Four episodes.
It's four episodes. It's a real light investment. And it's opens with the
And it opens with the Statue of Liberty as a horse girl.
Yeah, it does, boy!
Ah, it's good. I mean, yeah, like, you can make movies about football and people, and it's okay. And it doesn't have to dig into, like, and then they have concussions that ruin their quality of life long after they retire.
Hey guys, like, did you know wrestling is problematic?
Really?
Wait, wrestling?
You're telling the thing where me.
What's his name is like one of the, or Vince McMahon is one of the lead corp people.
Okay, actually,
maybe that wrestling. Was a bad example, you know what? Maybe wrestling is terrible.
Really?
That's the look. We have a whole channel for wrestling on the Discord because we have so many wrestling nerds in our server.
I'm sure that there's I'm sure there's a Vince McMahon of horse racing. I don't doubt it.
Yeah,
but I don't think that doesn't make all horse racing bad. Like, I know
even
people.
Even if it should be wiped from the earth.
I, like, literally know somebody that just because of this stupid series, they're going to the Breeders' Cup in California in the 1st of November. They're going to go watch the Breeders' Cup. And it's just like, you know what, man? That's like getting people out, doing things, getting away from your damn phone and computer for a bit. I can respect that.
No, Polly, the only good thing to do is to stay on your phone and yell at Itch.
And yell at Itch. I knew
that turn was coming.
Yell at people for liking horse girls.
I've gone horse racing twice with the company because they were just like, all right, we're going to have a company outing to the horse track.
To the horse track.
So, you know, things tech companies do.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, shit, I'm getting free food and booze out, and it's a nice day and I'm outside. Oh, this is nice. Same with baseball. The couple times I've gone, I'm like, oh, snacks and alcohol while sitting outside and watching a gently stimulating activity. This is great. That's what fishing is, too.
Where's the bad here?
Look, sometimes the normies got it.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah.
Sorry. If y'all can hear that, it's the it is the Air and Water Show or whatever it's called, where very loud planes fly over Chicago for like 3 days straight.
That's good. That's good ASMR. It's good. That's good environmental storytelling in our podcast. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. Last year it happened while we were like chilling at the park, and they were like flying right by us, and I was like, oh, we timed this bad.
That's perfect. I lived in the middle of nowhere, Ohio, once, and like it was near a military base, and you could hear like jets going over, breaking the sound barrier all the fucking time. And it was like the loudest goddamn thing. It would shake the house every time. We'd lived there for like 10 years. Goddamn, it was nuts. That whole time living there, though, was nuts. There's a lot of stories there, but I will not I will not dig into that for now. I will close by saying Cinderella Gray is awesome. Watch it if you want some top-notch horse girl racing shit. Rhett!
Hi.
Hey!
Rhett, we've got to know. You've got to tell us. Like Phoenix Wright trial music, it's time to know. Is Trails cooking or is Trails cooked?
I had a better segue. I'm sorry. I watched a lot of movies, and my favorite one was Uma Musume Pretty Derby, Beginning of a New Era.
All right, we'll get back to that. We'll get back to it. Tell us more, Rhett.
So I had a big movie list because I'm, you know, kind of on break from work right now. I had a couple weeks. I was like, I'm gonna just watch a movie every day because I am horrible about getting through movies.
Sure.
I'm just not really a movie guy. Mm-hmm. So it's just I'm trying to fix my fucking attention span. Because in December, I started watching this movie and I fell asleep. I was like not feeling good. It wasn't even the movie's fault. I'm like, this is really good. Oh, shit. And then like I kept going, and then 20 minutes later, oh no, it happened again. I have to stop. So I was like, okay, I'm going to put this on ice, and I'm just going to start over from the beginning when I'm ready. And I was finally ready.
Good.
This movie's really fucking good.
It's just so like,
yeah,
thematically rich. It's intense.
Yeah.
It just packs everything you want in that little journey of 90 minutes or so. It's just like, if you want to operate at the highest level, you know,
like the entire time.
Yeah. Like it's just on all cylinders at all times.
I thought I was a little confused the first time I watched it because they just yada, yada, yada through like the intro to a ridiculous, like they montage like her debut race, Jungle Pocket, the main character. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that I realized watching it a second time, most of it the second time, was that she's not really the main character.
No.
I kind of feel like this is the Agnes Tachyon movie.
Which is good because Agnes Tachyon
rules.
Amazing.
She like completely steals the scenes that she's in every single time. Mm-hmm. The way they animate her racing and it goes into like hyperspeed math void science zone.
Hyperspeed math void science zone is exactly the words I would use for that.
It really is. it goes like meta in a weird way.
Yes.
And like they do interesting things with the music. Like it's not like traditional, like, I don't know, like racing music. It's doing like electronic beeps and like humming. Mm-hmm. Like this movie has a very slight like psychological horror bent to it, I feel.
it really does.
It's not like actually scary in any way, but it is like deliberately uncomfortable in a few moments.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just really enjoyed it. I think there's a lot of sports anime. I don't have a lot of history with sports anime. The one this actually reminded me of Tomorrow's Joe in a weird way, though, which was the original sports anime.
That's like the major. Yeah, like that's a good. Mm-hmm. It really feels inspired by.
Because that is a series that is also very much about having the main character and chasing after his rival like desperately. Mm-hmm. And then reaching a point where, no, you're never going to surpass them and having to move on from that. And
it's heartbreaking. Oh, it's such good character. Like, it's such good character work.
Yeah.
It's just like you have this thing to strive for and it's snatched from you because you will just
It's
never.
Just out of reach forever.
Yeah. It's so good. And they work with that character so well in that headspace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a thought and it just evaporated from me. I'm sorry. Yeah. I had a really good time with the movie. I think the last like 4 minutes of the movie were weird because they do the thing and it's very big and cathartic. And I thought it was going to have like a few more conversations between the characters. And then it just jumps to like, this didn't actually happen. Like, idol concert with like four of the main characters. I'm just like, oh.
Oh, okay. You had to get that
out of nowhere.
You just kind of had to get that in.
Like, two of you characters really didn't do anything in this movie. You weren't in the final race. Why is this here?
Why are you in the victory concert?
Yeah, that was really weird. But up until that point, like 10 out of 10, well, maybe not 10, but I saw like 9.5. Yeah. Like, yeah. I really liked it. Yeah. Oh, that's the thought I had, is that Jungle Pocket in the first like third of this movie is suffering so bad from main character syndrome. Where she's just like, you're my rival. I'm going to beat you next time. And Agnes is like, what's your name again?
So good.
She's also just kind of a dick. She has a chip on her shoulder. Rude. She's just like, welcome all the losers. Like, I'm here today. You can go home if you want.
Yeah. There's a lot of very overconfident horses in this one, because the TM Opera O as well,
oh,
being
my
like,
God. She's so much.
You are all here to witness my domination and be in my, like,
I am the supreme overlord.
Yeah, be trampled in the wake of my victory.
She like, is so much.
Yeah, she's great. This movie's really good. It's very funny that of all the movies I watched, I was like, oh no, this was my favorite.
Oh no!
Okay, I also played a video game.
Okay.
Oh my God, my mouth is already dry. It's been 5 minutes. I don't talk, especially after 2 weeks of.
Oh God, yeah, I can imagine. Alone. You just kind of being alone shit. For 2 weeks. You're just not. Yeah, man. Hydrate.
Okay. Do I have? I played The Legend of Heroes: Trails Through Daybreak 2.
Uh-huh. Hey, John, do your line again. Do your line again.
All right. I get why you need to talk about something. That was a good one. Is Trails cooking or is Trails cooked?
If I truly have to pick between those two, it's a little cooked.
Oh,
you're the last holdout, Rat.
Oh,
Tom and Iffy are the last holdouts.
Yeah, they are. They're the devout.
I didn't dislike this game, though. So this is a little awkward because we took last year off from the podcast.
Yeah.
I played that game. I played the first one, I mean, and it was agonizingly long. I have like 150 plus hours on Steam.
Daybreak 1?
Yeah.
Why?
Daybreak 1 is just...
How much of that was you just tabbing away to watch VTuber stuff,
even
though?
A lot of it. Like, I don't actually... Okay. I mean, but I think the how long to beat is still
like 100,
way longer. For
105? 110?
Okay, yeah.
It's like Persona length.
Yeah, it is. It really
the
is.
The sequel is definitely shorter, but we'll get to that. But
these games have been chasing Persona for a while, too. Let's be honest.
That's true.
I know. God, well, they dropped all the social link and
oh, good. Thank God.
Stuff from Cold Steel was the most obvious with Persona. Me too. Me too.
And then Tokyo Xanadu. Me too.
Oh, I haven't played that one.
It's good. It's fun.
But yeah, that one went even more with like, hey, modern setting. Me too, Persona.
School? Day? Calendar?
Obviously all things that Persona invented.
I mean, Persona 5 invented all that.
Yeah. Okay,
Persona 5 didn't invent those, but you know why they were doing it.
Yeah, no, true. Yeah, it's really obvious in Cold Steel. So Trails Through Daybreak 1 was fine. It was just so long. Like, sometimes a game hits the point, wink, wink, 100 line, where all I can think about it is that holy fucking shit, this is so long. And just trying to muscle through to the end at some point. Like, the longer it goes on, like, all good points start to kind of fade away, where it just becomes about the length in my head. So Daybreak 1 was like a deliberate snub on my Game of the Year list. We did not talk about it at all.
It's very much like my Cold Steel 2 experience after it ended for the second time. And then it needed to end for a third time.
That's like the best one, though. What are you talking about? Do we disagree on Cold Steel 2? Man. That was the funniest weekend ever of me being like, oh, I'm going to beat it on Friday. I'm going to beat it on Saturday. I'm not beating it on Sunday.
Glorious.
Yeah, that one did wrap up for a while. But like Daybreak 1 is like a series of six like character and like location chapters that are each like 15 hours long. And then there's also like you go back to the main city in between each one. And that's like another 5 hours every time. It's just the most like expressive and long-winded Trails game they've ever made.
Whew.
So anyways, Daybreak 2, they delayed the sequel to this, which was my like, oh my God, because I couldn't take this game in February when it came out. I was just like, I have to accept that I'm not going to be caught up on Trails. And then they were like, by the way, Horizon comes out in the fall. And I'm just like, I just have to accept that I'm not caught up on Trails anymore. And then they delayed that one. I'm like, okay, there's a small window in the summer where I think I could push through Daybreak 2 and then have enough time before Horizon comes out next year to not be exhausted by then. And I will say, this game, I think the thing I heard about it is that the development was a little rushed because they kind of took people off it to finish up Ys 10.
Yep.
So the pacing in this game is wild because the first couple chapters are really short. Mm. Like, there will be like one side quest and one main event. And then when you rock up to that one main event flag, it's like all side quests will be canceled. I'm just like, is this the end of the chapter already? What's going on? Like,
that is crazy.
But it's also like this game has a lot of chapters that are very short. So it's obviously I think it's a very good thing that they're short, because it starts with like prologue chapter, overture chapter, mm-hmm. chapter 1A, chapter 1B, chapter 2A, chapter 2B.
Oh, jeez.
So there's a lot right up front where it's like, okay, it's fine that these are probably like less than 5 hours long, because it would have, you know, been too much if you were taking forever to do every little thing.
Yeah.
But it did feel like the world building was suffering a bit, but I'm like, it's fine. That's what the previous game was. Not every game needs to be the 130-hour epic. The combat is still the mix of real-time and turn-based from the previous one. I think they make the real-time part a little more interesting now, because you can cast like a basic tech from, or an arts from, the real-time combat as well. So you have, you know, normal combos, heavy attack, and an art.
Okay.
And I don't know, it just feels a little bit better to play, like, you know, dodge rolls, and like, if you time a dodge perfectly, you can switch to another character and have them jump in and do a counterattack, and then you're playing as them, so you're switching characters a lot more. It feels a little bit better to play. It's not like Ys or anything, though. It still has a bit of that stiffness that,
yeah,
you wouldn't expect from the company that also, like, makes Ys.
This is not the focal point. Like, this is here to facilitate you starting battles with a better advantage.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think if you're playing on the easier difficulties, you are kind of meant to just win against trash mobs through this.
Okay.
But I'm playing this game on Nightmare. Most of the time, I do want to go to the turn-based and just...
Oh, yeah.
The weird thing about the combat system is that you build up CP, like your craft meter, mm-hmm. through the real-time stuff. Mm-hmm. So every fight for most of the game will just be me like mashing on enemies for a bit, popping into the turn-based, and then immediately dropping an S-craft to wipe everything out.
That feels a little...
So they do have like tiers of enemies where there's like small enemies, medium enemies, large enemies, and the large enemies will have like so much more HP that doesn't work. So you actually do get like a few rounds of actual like combat. Also, those early chapters, they're really unbalanced level wise. That's another thing that made part of the game feel half baked, is because you can choose kind of like Reverie if you want to do like chapter 2B or 2A first. Mm-hmm. And just to be a rebel, I always pick the B-sides first.
Of course.
But then there's also, like Reverie, a shared dungeon between the characters. So, like, you can mix and match, like, characters who are on the A-path and characters who are on the B-path. And the leveling gets really kind of messed up there.
I can imagine.
So, like, when I did Chapter 2A, I was, like, 5 levels ahead of every enemy the entire time. So it's just like, there were multiple times in this game where I was so out-leveled for the dungeons, even towards the end of the game, where it's like, why am I going to fight these enemies that are like 3 levels below me? They don't give any experience at this point.
Yeah.
Because then when you fight something a little bit above you, it's like, oh, you gained 2 levels, like thousands of experience. Like, it's very Trails-y, like, you know.
The curve. The curve is
there. The curve is still very aggressive. So I think this game feels pretty good to play in general. Like, I really broke it by the end, where even that S-craft theory, that technique that I was using, I didn't even keep doing that. Eventually, I got to the point where arts were so strong that I was just like, I don't even have to engage with the turn-based stuff anymore, or the real-time stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm just immediately going to open the fight, cast a spell, have like my orbment set up so I have 0% delay on casting and recasting, do that twice, then maybe S-craft. Weird. So the same character is doing 3 attacks in like 1 turn. I've done 100,000 damage. Even the large enemies are fucking dead at this point. But that was like after I'd already beaten the game. Like, there's a huge, the whole post-game dungeon that goes on for a few hours, I was just like mopping the floor with it aggressively.
I mean, this feels kind of like in-game modern Trails anyway. Like, yeah. I feel like ever since the Crossbell games, mm-hmm. once you get to the end of the game, if you're not just like wiping the floor with trash mobs and winning fights in like 1 or 2 turns, like you ain't doing it right.
It's just very funny when they get to the point of like, they given you the real good shit finally after the end of the game, where it's like, oh, I have 2 different 40% off casting spells things mm-hmm. and a 20% one. That all stacks. All magic is now free.
Did they ever find a way to counter evasion tanks?
Yeah, evasion doesn't seem as good anymore. I did mm-hmm. have a character with over 100% evasion, mm-hmm. and they were still getting hit.
Okay, it probably factors because, like 50% of that number now or something to just make it not at... Because that, like, evasion tanks have been stupid since the Crossbow games, Steel. Too.
Yeah. I think crafts may have a different hit ratio. Sure. I think there's also evasion on art-based attacks, and that one is... Okay. Way harder to raise.
Oh, of course.
Like, you'll maybe see like 30% on that.
Right, right.
Yeah, like enemies doing normal attacks will still miss, but they don't do normal attacks that much.
Yeah, everybody's kind of got special moves now that they're mm-hmm. busting out, so not as easy to dodge that.
Yeah, evasion tank. I tried and it wasn't as broken, but it was still like handy.
That's cool. It's just like, it's one of those things where it's just like, it's cheesy in a way, but it's like, if it's there, I'm just going to fucking do it.
Oh, it was so stupid. I think it still worked up to Reverie, where it's just like, okay.
Yeah, it works very much in Reverie. I had 2 evasion tanks in Reverie.
That one. Plus, Reverie also gave you a lot of stealth options.
A lot of stealth options, yeah.
So, like, yeah, I remember the final boss would just being like, okay, I've got 2 characters with like super high evasion and they go stealth
and they
every
go
other
stealth.
Turn.
Yeah. So it's just so literally funny. Cannot be hit.
Yeah.
Is time stuff really good? Can you like knock a boss out of attacking for, you know, turn after turn after turn?
Like, or delay? That, like, still, delay is still a thing, I have to imagine. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It also feels pretty nerfed.
Yeah. Okay. That's
like, I never really particularly noticed.
Like, all of those systems are very good, but they're also mm-hmm. very powerful, and they never really got good at balancing around your overpowered stuff, other than just like, you're like Cold Steel, like everybody would just have an overpower mode they go into at like mm-hmm. certain thresholds of their HP bar where they get like 10-20% health back and a buff, so you can't do that for a while. And then that was just like every boss from Cold Steel 2 on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some really hard, because I was playing on Nightmare, there's some really hard fights towards the start of this game where it's mm-hmm. like, oh, this boss, when they're at like 20% HP, they just get like a whole bunch of HP back when they go Berserk mode, mm-hmm. and they seem to keep doing that. And I'm fighting like 5 at once. So like trying to do AoEs to take the whole group down at once really backfires when they all go Berserk and heal at the same time.
That's a big bummer.
Yeah, so I did have fun. There's actually a point where I felt like I'm actually a little stuck, because the first time you go into like the Reverie Corridor mm-hmm. equivalent, you're in like the VR mode, mm-hmm. and it's like you can't leave, and there's no healing spots either. And the boss is real hard at the end, so I like fought and lost and went back to the safe. And I'm like, okay,
we're gonna turn this down to normal.
I'm not turning it down to normal, but
of course not.
I'm thinking like, eventually I'll stop leveling if I kill everything over and over and over and there's just no more enemies mm-hmm. and they're too low. Like, it would be a horrible grind. And then I'm like, so in theory, eventually I'll just run out of EP and just not be able to heal.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's very curious. So go back to the boss, win by the skin of my teeth. Like, ooh. Damn, that was a little scary, Trails. You, you've never done that to me before. You accidentally have no way out,
found
like
some
3
teeth.
Hours into the game. Because it's this one specific like tutorial section that they just didn't think needs a safety net.
Interesting.
But again, that was one time. Like all these games, they start kind of hard and they get easier as you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think gameplay-wise, this was fine. Pacing-wise, it was pretty good. It wasn't it was like 30 hours shorter than the previous one, which makes a huge difference because you feel like the last chapter in the last one is so ridiculously overdone. Mm. Oh, I also think this game does a really good job of breaking out of the formulaic way that Trails games are written.
Okay.
Because Cold Steel especially was Cold Steel 2, 3, and 4 all have like a way they structure chapters that they will do like 4 times in a row.
Yeah.
Like in Cold Steel 2, the way every chapter has to end with a way for Rean to use his special power for the boss fight. The way in like 3, all those early chapters will end with the villains kind of winning, and then a hero will appear on a cliff and jump down to save you. And they just do it like 3 or 4
it's like
times
means
per
miracle.
Game.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Like Cold Steel 4 also, like the first like 3 chapters are just like, oh, we're just gonna do that like 2 more times, huh? Like they just have rhythms that they fall into. And this one does dramatically avoid that.
That's right.
I couldn't predict where it was gonna go at any real given moment, especially because some of those early chapters are so short where it's like they don't have time to really zag on you that much.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a new kind of story mechanic in this one that I don't want to spoil. Mm. And it's really interesting at first. And then by the end, I did feel like it's a real good way to write themselves out of all stakes and consequences.
Oh, no.
Like, okay, this is where things are going to go a little negative. Mm-hmm. So gameplay-wise, it's fine. I think the story is where it really lost me. Like, the characters are still great. Mm-hmm. The story, especially when you hit chapter 3, I'm sorry, iffy. I'm a hater on this one.
This is a constant thing that I've heard about this game, actually.
Chapter 3 is the one really long one, mm-hmm. and it's, like, it's actually, like, 6 mini-chapters in one. Like, they straight up have, like, Act 1, Act 2.
Oh, jeez.
Or, like,
Homestuck
Act A.
Pacing.
I know. It's, like, Chapter 3, Act F.
Oh, jeez.
Or something.
Attack on Titan, the final season, Part 2, Chapter 8.
Yeah. So before Chapter 3, though, was, like, the interlude chapter, which is actually the longest one up to that point. It's another, like, we're going to go to a beach vacation and, you know, have the mini games and stuff that they've done in a bunch of previous games.
So good this year.
Yeah.
Or been Zero. Maybe it was Zero. I forget which one.
I think it's at least a Zero. It might be.
Probably. Yeah, I think it's Zero. I think it's in Zero because that's when they introduced Kea, right?
Yeah. No. Wait, yeah.
It's kind of in both, I think. Yeah. Anyways, that's a really long chapter. And I had a thought at one point of going, boy, this game has a lot of convoluted ways for you to fight other heroes. Like, because there's not that many villains in this one, so they have to find ways for you to fight, like, the other hero characters.
Oh, right.
Trail Third is so funny in that about that.
They reference Trail Third in this game. Okay, I'll just say it now because it's relevant. They straight up say, wow, it's weird that a rogue artifact made a copy of me that you guys have to fight for a filler boss fight again.
Oh.
Straight up saying, like, I can't believe this has happened twice.
Oh, you know, man.
If I had a nickel for every time.
I'm like, I'm already thinking this is repetitive, and when the characters also go, this has happened in Trails before.
Oh, God.
It's so weird.
It's like that moment in Final Fantasy 13 where it's just like, man, the story really isn't going anywhere because all I'm doing is just kind of running around whacking enemies in a subway and grinding, and then the characters stop and go, huh, guess we better take some time to train, huh? It's like, oh, Jesus
my God.
Fucking Christ. No, I love 13, but that is just like a moment that is so on the nose. It's like, you saying it doesn't make it better.
Mm. rough. So the interlude chapter is a lot of like hero other allies being like, I have to test your resolve through the clashing of swords.
I just hate
fight,
that.
Fight, fight.
I hate that trope so much.
So you do that like four or five times.
Pokemon Odyssey has so much mind control in it. And I'm just like,
so John,
this is the number one hack way to make your characters fight each other.
And John, I got bad news.
Oh, is this when I got a lot of mind control in it?
I was already exhausted by the interlude chapter, having a lot of, you know, like, test your resolve, let's fight, or like, I want to test my skills against you, like, fights. Yeah. One of which is really good, but then it being like half the chapter was exhausting. Chapter 3, the really, really long one, is a whole big mind control arc.
Yay!
So it's just nothing but characters going rogue out of nowhere, fight, 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 then absolve them of all consequences because it was mind control.
Man!
Six times in a row?
It sounds
exhausting.
Like...
exhausting!
Trails may be kind of cooked.
I couldn't believe some of the audacity of some of the things they pull. I thought it, for the most part, I do think the game pulled up from that towards the end. Like the final chapter is great. The last boss is excellent.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But also it was excellent mechanically.
Right.
Like, cause they do a real good job of like bringing all the systems together, having some like cinematic twists that you don't see coming. Like they made it a really fun gameplay experience. And there's one part where, because it pulls the surprise, you have to use all the characters in your team at one point part. I had characters that I hadn't equipped in like a good 20 Oops. Levels, none of which had a heal on them or a decent Oops. Heal. So I had to do this one phase like three times. And I'm just like, I can't win this. I'm cooked here. And then I'm like, and then finally I'm like, wait, two of these, they don't have heals, but they do have barriers. Like they changed the way Earth Guard works to where it's not just, you know, a set one or two hits now.
Yeah.
It's just like bonus HP on top of.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I see. That's smart.
It's more how a lot of games do it. Mm-hmm. So like these characters, they can't heal, but they can use a craft to start with like a bonus 4,000 HP or whatever. And they can do that a couple times because I'm starting this fight with 100 CP on everyone. So like I'm just bearing up like multiple times, trying to have the main character do a little bit of damage. There's a shadow clone that's also like running around attacking everybody. I kill that, and the summoner makes three more on his next turn. I go, oh, I'm so fucking cooked. And then I attack the summoner, and it goes, okay, you've done enough damage. This fight's over. I'm like, oh my god.
Good god, that's insane.
Yeah, good. All you have to do is get it to half health. I'm like, oh, thank God. It was so funny because I was like, this game's been really easy for like the last 20 hours. Oh, God, I'm losing hard here. Right after I was like, I broke the game by making magic free. Oops. It's like, oh, but you don't get that character in this fight. Shit. But so final boss was mechanically great. I was really rolling my eyes at some of the story reveals. I'm sorry. It did not connect with me emotionally. I went, oh, that's your answer, huh? to this mystery. So I'm not sure where I land on this one so far. Like, this is the 20th game I've played. If it's in the top half or the bottom half, we're not sure yet. And then I watched the trailers for the next one, Trails Beyond the Horizon. Uh-huh. I went, oh, thank fucking God, this one looks better.
That's good. That's good. That's something.
Something, yeah.
Because the story in this one really felt like middle chapter of a trilogy, but not in like the dark middle chapter, but like we're making three games and we're just kind of treading water with this one.
Oof. Yeah, that's the main thing that I've heard about Daybreak 2 is like, this game feels mostly like filler.
I don't really feel much of consequence happened.
Yeah, like that. At all. Nothing, like, I've seen Seinfeld memes about this game, like, nothing happens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's funny. That was what really killed me with like Marvel stuff was back in the day. It was I just started seeing the big event movies and it was like, none of this mattered. Nothing happened.
Yeah. I can very much say I feel like Cold Steel 4 was the end game for me.
Yeah.
And having to come back down from that. And on top of like where I felt like it should have been gaining momentum, the games have now been like, hey, we're just kind of not going to have a whole lot happen in this one, which is just like the wrong direction to do. Because like the main thing is that the Ouroboros storyline has just stopped for like the last three games.
Oh my God. That's insane.
The whole Grandmaster reveal. All of this is supposed to be big and mean something.
Yeah. So having that just on deliberate pause. And I knew that going in. I knew people were saying, hey, don't expect like overall plot progression.
Yeah.
It still hurts when you read it and go, man, there really was no overall plot progression.
That's crazy.
Like, there's stuff you learn in Cold Steel 4 right at the end that's like mind blowing, and they just haven't touched it yet since. I will say this game kind of advances the AI plot line from Reverie,
right,
which is maybe also one of my least favorite parts.
It's not good.
It's just so funny. John, this is where John would be like, what is going on in Trails now? Where it's like, oh, by the way, the orbital network and the septium veins converged at one point to create a singular technological revolution. So now there's this hyper-advanced AI running around.
John skipped the cutscene, and now we're here.
That's like decades of future tech run. It's weird.
Trails is kind of just gone off the rails in a way that I...
Under normal circumstances, I would appreciate, but like they had built something with those first five games, I think, where like you felt like they were telling stories that had some groundedness to them. They were thinking this out, like they felt like a plan, and then now it's just like, no, you're just slapping this together by the seat of your pants. This is all pretty bad.
There's actually a moment right at the end of this one where like the two main characters look at each other and say like, yeah, we still haven't resolved that that mystery from the very, very beginning of Daybreak 1. We're still working on that one.
Guys, I think I've got to pull the ripcord here. I think I just can't with this series anymore.
It's really hard for me personally to recommend Daybreak 1 and 2, even though I... We'll keep going. I know Tom and Iffy like these ones a lot more than I do. Daybreak 1 especially is such a time commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, man, it's when I watched like 10 movies in the last week, it's just like, man, you can be doing so much more with like 100 hours than a single Trails game.
Especially when they're not really living up to a pedigree that we like. Like, again, it's like maybe the... I won't go as far as saying maybe they're not good. It's like, no, it's just, it's not for me anymore. Like, I think that's where I settled on it. So I don't want to shit talk things because I know that this is still a very beloved series and I still love it too. And that's why I'm so like, bummed out that like, I don't want to put myself through that. It's just like, I know what I did not like about Reverie, and I know that they just kind of lean way more into a lot of that stuff, and hearing that like Daybreak 2 is what it is, ever since it came out all I've heard is like, this is the nothing game, and it's just like, I don't think I have it in me, folks. I think this is where I'm out, but I am going to play the shit out of Trails in the Sky Remake, though. I'll still play the shit out of that.
Which is funny, because that's the one where I'm like, okay, I can skip it, because I already played that game. But also, like, that one being the Daybreak combat does nothing for me because I've played two games.
You played
with that.
Two games with that. I've not played any. So
yeah,
that'll be a little fresher of an experience for me.
I am still like 50-50 on there if they are going to pull some bullshit with the story in that one.
Oh my god! If they do a Higurashi Go and Sotsu,
the Final Fantasy VII remake,
the Evangelion.
There's definitely a way they could do it.
They could. There is a way that they can, and we all know what it is.
Yeah.
It's real. I'm going to hate it if they do. Like, I will actually probably be real butt mad if they do what I think they might do.
They should have a choice. They should have a button that goes, did you play the previous games or not? And if you click no, the last like 10 hours change to what the original was. Just make two endings, seriously.
Yes, do that.
Is this something y'all can tell me about, or is this something
I'll tell you after the podcast.
All right, okay, cool. Is this something us non-Cold Steel playing plebes?
Right. Appreciate. Right.
It's definitely stuff that begins in Cold Steel.
I can still hear it. I think here's where I'm at. I think I can still play Cold Steel 1 and 2.
Sure.
I think I can play those and have, because I was, because like, I've shit on Azure a lot, but like, sounds like it can get much worse.
Yeah, I think that you could play. I think you could play Cold Steel 1 through 4 fine. I just, for me, like Reverie, Reverie was my breaking point where I was just like, I don't think this is for me anymore.
And I like that one. That's the crazy part.
That's the crazy part. One. Yeah, yeah. I just, I was not on board with that one at all.
I think my deal was just kind of like facing Trails, like in my head, changing from being one thing into another.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I need to, this Trails in the Sky, it you know, it's peak. It's, you know, it's as good as it gets. And then it's like, okay, this is going to be, you know, 20 games. It can't be peak for 20 games. No. There's no way on earth it's going to be peak for 20 games. So it's like, do you want to play a 60 hour Falcom game with great music that, and cool, the, you know, Trails combat. And then it has a really long final dungeon where you fight all the bosses that introduce themselves 50 hours earlier. And it's really cool. I'm probably still horny for that, you know, at some point.
Yeah.
Probably want to play Xenoblade 2 and 3 first.
Yeah.
But, you know?
Because I think it's impossible for it to be peak for 20 games, because by the time of Daybreak 2, they're straight up saying multiple times, hey, this has happened before.
Yeah.
Like, they're rehashing plot points. Manga. Yeah. Like, Daybreak 1 introduces, like, the 14-year-old child soldier Jaeger, who isn't Fee, and I'm just like, yeah, y'all did this.
You did that already.
Cold Steel.
Yeah, and Fee was just already good.
Didn't you do that in Sky and Azure?
You did that in Sky and Azure, and you did that in, I mean, come on, you could draw the analog to Joshua if you want.
Oh my god.
Like, they're a little different every time, but especially because the Daybreak 1 and Fee are like the most similar because they're on your side right away.
Yeah.
Like, what's her name? Psycho Girl.
Oh, Shirley.
Shirley is a very different character for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, just they keep bringing up the DG cult in Daybreak 2. Like, they haven't moved on from a lot of this stuff. It just sometimes feels like going in circles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is, nobody's done this.
Yeah,
nobody's
this is ridiculous.
50 to 100 hour RPGs that are telling a continuous story. That's cool, but also there's a reason nobody's done it, because it's maybe a bad idea.
Maybe hard to make that compelling at every stop. But
I feel like nobody's done even close of doing like six interconnected.
Oh, you haven't played Kingdom Hearts, Rat. You haven't played Rants. Rants apparently goes out on a high note. I'll just say.
Maybe Trails in a decade.
In a decade. We'll find out.
They're saying like the next ones are going to take longer to make because they're so complicated.
Of course.
Because 3D games. So imagine waiting 8 years between some of these.
I'm glad I don't feel that need anymore. I feel like I was able to just let go after I finished Reverie. So I don't like, I never felt any desire, or I never felt like I was left out when people were playing Daybreak and I wasn't. And I was just like, I think I'm good.
Daybreak being another like hard reset of the cast was just, it was one step too far to me, because we'd been in Cold Steel land for so long. Yeah. Where it's like, that's Legend of Heroes 6. Like, I think that's the original Sky.
Yeah, that's
it's
the
like
original
a spin-off
Sky.
In a franchise. So, like, Cold Steel is like a spin-off franchise inside of Legend of Heroes Trails. It's insane. Five games in there as well.
Yeah, it was 10 games, and then now 3 more games. And then a remake that's going to actually, can we defy fate?
Yeah, pretty much. Can I mention one more thing real quickly? I know I've been going on for a while. I watched Thunderbolt Fantasy Season 4.
Was it good?
It was really good.
Fuck yeah.
It was like,
I love to hear it.
It was the most like, try to find a recap online though, which I couldn't because it doesn't really give you any jumping point, like character wise. It just resumes from where season 3 was.
Gotcha.
So like I was watching it with the wiki open to be like, oh, also the characters being, you know, all complicated Chinese names. I was like, type. What's that character's
remind
name?
Myself. How does this go?
Oh, okay. They were in season 2. Okay. I remember them now. Pause. Who the fuck are they talking about now? Like, but like, it was really fun story and action wise. And then there's a finale movie, which pretty definitively closes the whole franchise. It is very sad seeing it have like 180 people completed it on Analyst. And it's on Crunchyroll. It's not an availability thing.
Yeah, it's an interest thing.
It's nobody's watching the crazy Gen Urobuchi puppet show.
Right.
I think there would be more interest if it was a much more expensive, traditionally animated shonen show. Because I kind of see that in my head now, having watched stuff like Solo Leveling and Jujutsu Kaisen, where like, seeing what Cream of the Crop Shonen looks like now and imagining the fights in this animated like that would be so fucking cool. But instead, it's puppets flailing against each other with limited CG that looks a little cheesy. But it's really fun. I did really have a good time with it. I was like, no, I can't end this podcast till I mention it, that it's really good. And again, I didn't really care for season 3, so it definitely pulled up out of that. Season 3 was like my least favorite one.
Oh, well, I'm glad it turned around. Yeah,
it ended on a really high note.
Good. I want to get back to that at some point because I really like that first season.
Yeah, you like season 1 more than me, but then I was like, John, season 2 is the best one. And even now I'm like, season 2 is the best one.
Okay, well, I want to watch it because Cecile hasn't watched season 1 yet. I'm excited.
Okay, so you can watch season 1 again and then stop.
You see, when I watch a show and then I finish it and there's no more show, it's very hard for me to go back to that show. I watched Attack on Titan in 2014. Oh, I watched all of it. And now there's a million Attack on Titans. Come on.
So that was like the first two seasons then?
It was the first season. It was the first one season. Oh,
God. Yeah, there was a gap between season 2.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking about that, actually. That like, my superpower is that I keep up on all these franchises. That's getting crazy. Back to Thunderbolt very Fantasy. Impressive. I'm getting back to Trails.
Caught up on Yakuza?
I think Question I mark? Am.
I think you're
caught up. I played the pirate Yakuza one.
In Xeno?
I haven't played Xenoblade X. That's the one, like...
You're still not caught up on Xeno, right? Tut, tut, tut.
Maybe they should do a 60 frames per second patch on Switch 2. They're going to do that and charge 10 people $10 for it. I know it.
Oh, God.
But yeah, Thunderbolt Fantasy is a very, very cool thing. It's done now. It's good. Just a trim 4 seasons and like 3 movies.
Just a nice. Hey, it's smaller than that. Is that smaller than Umamusume?
Oh god, it's really close. It's close. Yeah, it's like close. Exactly the same length, honestly.
So you can watch. You can just have a marathon of Umamusume, Sound Euphonium, and Thunderbolt Fantasy.
Sound cool. Euphonium was so good.
Oh, I need to finish it.
Yeah,
one more season.
Okay, I'm done.
I think we're good.
All right.
Good podcast, y'all.
That was a good one, everybody. We're going to wrap this. I do want to touch on one thing before we go.
Sure.
Recently, a new feller joined our community named Leo, and they informed us that they are listening to every episode of the SoxCast from the beginning.
So you're doing a time capsule right now?
So... When he finally gets to this episode 2.5-3 years from now, let's all say hi to Leo from the future. Hi, Leo.
Hi, Leo.
I just thought that's such a crazy
that's
thing.
A cute joke.
Just like I just imagining going through everything we've done, like, because it's 10 years of podcast. It's like 170 shows. Sure, it doesn't sound like a lot in 10 years, but then you consider like. Those first 8 years were all 3+ hour shows as well. Yeah. So,
They were occasionally bi-weekly.
Yeah, a lot. And then, like, there was that one whole year where we had guests every time. That was insane. But, yeah, we're going to go ahead and get out of here. It's been a while, so we decided we're going to stick to your ear holes a little longer than usual. Sometimes things build up, and you just got to get it all out.
I mean, it's kind of, it was the end of Trails episode.
Yeah, like this, it kind of needs it, you know? See, the official verdict.
In memoriam.
No. You know the Rhett, Marvel movie thing?
John gave up, Rhett Pauly gave up, and finally I hate Trails now.
The credits are scrolling, the black screen, you know, the last credit scrolls off the screen, words fade in, the legend of heroes will return and Trails through the horizon.
Yeah, buddy!
This is not the end. The trailer's really good. I'm back in. It's the hilarious
part. Can't believe Trails is over. Oh, well.
It had a good run, especially on our show, because we literally went like 9 years mentioning it or Falcom every episode.
That's a pretty good run.
Yeah. All right. John, where can the folks at home find you?
FarawayTimes.com. I'm continuously working to... I've been doing a lot more blogging lately. I've been doing a bunch of games credit. I'm really pleased about it.
Mm. Words. Those things you got to read, folks. It's not videos. Yeah, you can't listen to it. Use your eyes.
Megami Tensei 2 and shit.
You got to use your eyes and let your brain interpret the squiggles that are on the screen and then form your own thoughts about that. So... Mm-hmm. That's real smart guy shit in the year 2025.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got some smart guys. We got some smart folks.
We got a few. Yeah. We got a few. I'm not going to name names because I don't want the dummies to feel left out.
Yeah.
Kusakari.
If you think it's you, obviously it's you. Yeah. You just got to go read my crit. And then you'll know that you can read book. We can read words. Yes,
you can read words. Good job.
Don't leave them in TikTok form.
Rhett.
Okay. lock.on.hololivepro.com/tickets-en/ This is the link for Amani Kanata's first solo live lock on tickets, streaming tickets now available. The number one media event of the year for me.
Oh, did you buy that? Did you buy a ticket? Did you go?
I watched it like 3 times so far.
Oh, wow. Look at you go. Look at you go.
She's the best.
Sorry, go ahead.
Domino meme of like Iffy mentioning idols like 10 years ago to me fucking sobbing during the most idol song at the end of this concert.
All right.
Rhett. I heard that my holo Oshi Bibu is Gaga for Labubu.
None of those words are in the Bible.
And that's going to do it, folks. Remember, we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.